Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 19 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, and discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, Comic Timing goes Hollywood as we discuss comic book movies. And to do so, Matt and I are joined by Drew M., another comic fan born in the year 1984, proving once again that youngster comic fans do exist. Hey, who knew? Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey, folks. It is episode 19 of Comic Timing. Yeah, that's right. We're up to the big 1-9. One away from episode 20. I can't believe they've been around this long already. Let's start things off first with the man who has been on the show many a time now. He is my partner in this situation. He is Matt S.
You better not say partner in crime, Ian. Or
I stopped myself, actually. Yeah.
We all know who that is, anyway. you know what? It's just like Christmas Eve, I'm telling you.
Ho, 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 sir. Ho, ho, ho.
It's the 20th episode.
Yeah, well, that one's next week, and we'll have a special guest on for that.
I suppose that's like for you, like the night before Hanukkah or something, right?
Something along those lines, yeah. Only I never used to get the seven gifts, like the rumors were. I only got one huge one, but I was fine with that. We're joined also this week by a weekly special, as it were, a guy who loves talking movies and loves talking everything else. He is Drew M. Drew, what's going on?
Not much, Ian. How's it going?
Going pretty well. Before we get things going here, you have a new podcast down in the pipeline, I believe, that you've talked about?
Yeah, actually I have one that's hopefully going to be... We're going to record that soon. It's called The Complete First Season, and we're going to be talking about great and maybe not so great first seasons of television.
That sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. So you're going to the good, the bad, and the ugly, right?
Yeah.
and
I'm hoping for that first season Punky Brewster review, because I'm all over that.
Oh, dude, hell yeah. Apparently, I used to have a giant crush on her when I was a kid, but that's what my parents like telling me.
I saw her a few years ago on Sabrina, you know, she's filled out quite nice.
Ho. And Matt, you also have a new podcast, so
yeah,
why don't you tell everybody about that?
Podcasting Factory, that's all I can say. Yeah, I started a new podcast that is dedicated to the TV show The Office. Not really comic book related, but, you know, it's one of my favorite shows, and I feel a lot of passion for that show, and we're starting on the third season this Thursday at 8:30, 7:30 Central, so I plan it to be a weekly show where we kind of dissect the show, review, talk about clips, hits, whatever. There's a bunch of different things. I've got a 0.5 episode uploaded right now to all your favorite servers. You can subscribe through iTunes or through traditional RSS and the website thatswhatshesaid.libsyn.com. So thatswhatshesaid.libsyn.com, all one word, and you can subscribe from there, because I don't think that it's on iTunes, but it's not in the browsing structure. It's not like showing up in the search engines or anything.
I tried searching for it and I found it, so it's officially in there now. So yeah,
hey, not bad. I guess I'm ready to see those subscriptions roll in. So
that's what she said. Yeah, and I listened to episode 0.5, and well, the smooth stylings of Matt can certainly be found on that episode. It's a good job, man, so hopefully keep it up and get going there. And before we actually get into this episode, I want to send a shout out to the Raging Bullets guys, who are now up to episode 25. They're about 6 ahead of us, so we're slowly be catching up to them. And episode 25 is actually, I believe, part 1 is released as of the day that we're recording this episode. They're going to have a nice 4-part extravaganza going through Kingdom Come, The Kingdom, and Watchmen. So those of you who listen to Raging Bullets, make sure to check that out. I'm sure it's going to be great. And congrats to Sean and Jim on episode 25. Keep them coming, guys.
And you know, Ian, actually, we're pretty close in number, but they have us just outweighed by sheer volume of podcasting information.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that
we can fit like 3 or 4 of our episodes in one of theirs. this.
Especially with that one episode 10 that they did where they had pretty much, I think, every major comic known to man in that one episode there. Infinite Crisis and Identity Crisis and the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah, if I ever did that, my head would fall off.
A lot of crises.
Oh, yes, indeed. And, you know, DC loves their crises. But speaking of DC, we're going to be talking some DC today. We're going to be talking some Marvel. We're going to be talking a little bit of everything as we are getting into comic book movies today. Now, comic book movies, there are plenty of them out there. Plenty of them that, what's the word, sucked, and plenty of them that didn't. And we'll hopefully be getting into both of those. So here is a bit of what we will be discussing. We've all seen them. We've all seen some greats and some that made us cringe. With successes such as X-Men, Spider-Man, Superman Returns, and Batman Begins, are comic book movies on the path to greatness? Have they finally shaken the feeling that most comic book movies are B-movies, or will overexpansion be the eventual death of the genre? Tell us your favorites, your guilty pleasures, and your worst experiences with comic book movies, and we'll discuss them on the show. So I'll go with the guest first, and I'll ask him the all-important question. Drew, what is your favorite comic book movie, and why?
Well, I'm a big fan, as far as superhero movies goes, I'm a huge fan of the Spider-Man movies. Of those two, the one that impressed me the most, and not just because of how great a movie it is, but how easily it's able to capture the imaginations of people that don't like comic books, like my father, is Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
And so, it's a great movie, and I've watched it several times and still love it, so that's probably my favorite.
Do you feel that it's the appeal to the broad audience that makes it one of the favorites, or were there specific parts of it that you very much enjoyed?
Well, yeah, there's the specific parts, mainly I like the whole Spider-Man No More part, and I got a big geek out with that part. I don't know, for some reason that it just struck a chord with me, and it's just one of my favorites.
Well, how about you, Matt? What would your favorite comic book movie be?
Oh, man. See, you don't understand what this is like, Ian, because, you know, you're a lot younger than I am. And when I was a kid, from age 14 up until, I don't know, in my late 20s, there was no such thing as a good comic book movie.
Oh.
And it really drove me crazy as a kid, because I remember I used to buy these, like, comic magazines and like, film threat magazines and stuff, and they would always list these, like, 10 million comic book movies that were optioned and that supposedly were coming out really soon, and none of them ever materialized. But, you know, something about that year 2000, right around there, we started getting some actually decent movies, especially coming out of Marvel, because Marvel was always like the huge joke with their movies, and they tried a few in the 80s. Like, you know, you remember the, or maybe you don't remember, the sweet Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Memories.
He didn't wear the skull, he didn't have any logo or anything, you know, it was really pretty pathetic.
And he was blonde.
Yeah, that's true. And a few other things, yeah, I can't even remember. Of course, the Roger Corman FF movie, that never really aired anyway, so I don't know if that counts. Basically, anything that they did was pretty hokey, pretty bad. And then going forward, and yeah, that's the thing, you know, like Drew said, that Spider-Man 2 and X-Men 2, both for me, are pretty much near-perfect superhero movies for comic nerds. And non-comic nerds. I think the reason why the second ones are the best is just simply because the first movies way too much always have to spend like an hour and a half on the origin.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's only so many times. We've seen like the Batman origin now like 8 times in different movies. So, you know, same thing with Spider-Man. You know, like everybody knows how Spider-Man got his powers. So once that stuff's out of the way and you can get into actually telling a solid 2-hour movie about the characters, about the villains, about whatever's happening, you know, that seems to be the sweet spot. Now, that is kind of a loaded question, though, because my actual probably all-time favorite comic book movie is, I think, American Splendor.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on my short list definitely also, so.
I just watched it again over the weekend, because we were talking last week on the forum, we were talking a little bit about Harvey Pekar, because his new series came out through Vertigo, the first issue a week or two ago, and so I got the bug, and I went back and rewatched it, and it still holds up. But, you know, for a lot of people out there, I'm sure that that's not something that they want to talk about. as far as thinking of comic book movies.
Well, I mean, American Splendor also is just, it's one of those, like, classics, basically. And, I mean, it's one of those ones that also was able to emulate the comic book just so incredibly well. And, well, with that new series that's out now, actually, I picked that series up. I'm actually really liking it. It makes me want to rewatch the movie, to tell you the truth, because I've never watched it all the way through. I've only really seen, like, part of it on HBO in the middle of the night. So it'll be nice to actually maybe sit down and watch that all over again, because it does something that few comic book movies can do. It just, it emulates it, and it makes it feel real, as opposed to it actually being a quote-unquote comic book movie.
That's true. You definitely should rent that or get that DVD, because aside from being a really good movie, there's, I think the commentary track on there is really great, because it has Harvey and his wife, and has all the main cast, and everybody on there, and it's really interesting listen. A lot of those commentaries are boring as hell, but that was pretty interesting. You know, that's something that you bring up. Now let me ask you this question, because in American Splendor and in a few other comic book movies, the directors have chosen to sort of overtly acknowledge that these are comic book movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And by that, what I mean is, you know, in American Splendor, they have panels. They show panels of the comic. They show him drawn sometimes and different things like that. And then also I'm thinking about a movie like The Hulk, where they have this very specific screenshots and placements where they try to emulate panels on a page and different mm-hmm. things like that. Now, is that something that you want to see or appreciate in a movie, or is that something that just annoys you or draws you out of the film?
Well, you know what? Honestly, it depends on how it's used, because, I mean, I've seen a couple of films where, like The Hulk, actually, because The Hulk was really one of them, where it just felt very out of place. You know, it felt like they were sort of forcing it on us, as opposed to it actually really working 100% in the movie itself. I mean, when you go with style, when you go with grace for a comic book movie, right away you got to think of Sin City, which actually very successfully uses that washed-out tone, obviously mostly black and white with a little bit of color in there, that made it feel just like the comic book. Uses a lot of the elements of the comic book and almost had a panelistic quality when it comes to the shots. I mean, literally, you can go shot for shot for shot almost from the Sin City movie to the Sin City graphic novels. So, you know what? Honestly, it really depends on how they're used, because if you're forcing it into a movie, it's not going to work. If it works in the scheme of what you're trying to do, I say go for it.
Yeah, I agree. It works so well in American Splendor because I think because it's about a guy who's writing a comic book.
Yeah.
And it's so it can kind of wink at the audience and say, hey, this is a comic book or whatever. And it can do that just as well because it's about comic books.
Sure, definitely, without a doubt. And I'd say one of my favorite comic book movies, in fact, I guess if I have to choose, you know, a top comic book movie, I'm going to have to go with Ghost World, which to me is, I mean,
that movie, Ian. It all has to do with Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, hardy, har, har, har. No, actually, it's Steve Buscemi, but well, look, I mean, that movie succeeds in something that very few movies got to do, and it gets past the fact that it's a comic book. And I feel that that one is a movie. You could have never seen the comic, or you could have, you could have never read the comic at all, or you could have read the comic and you would appreciate it just the same. It's not the sort of thing like, say, and people might disagree with this statement, like, say, Batman. When you see Batman Begins, you'll probably have more of an appreciation for the character if you already know the character. If you already know who Batman is, if you've already read Batman comics in the past, if you've seen the cartoon, and so on and so forth. With Ghost World, I went in entirely clean. I had never seen the comic even on the shelves before. I'd never really even heard of it until a couple people even mentioned it to me. And I sat down, I watched the movie, I loved the movie, and I actually have to go out and read the comic book because I still haven't, because I love the movie so much that part of me doesn't even want to see what the comic looked like, because then I might like the movie a little less. I'm actually sort of afraid of that, because it's so well shot and so well acted, and I can relate to it as well, because, I mean, at the age that I'm at right now, when I went to see that, sort of the change from high school to college, when I saw that for the first time, I had been in college for a year, and I knew exactly what they were talking about, the whole distancing yourself from your past and moving on to the future. It really struck a chord for me, and that's why I'd say that Ghost World is probably my favorite and it probably will be one of my favorites for a long time to come because it gets it right entirely, and that's why it's a great comic book movie.
You know, it's interesting because I can't remember, to tell you the truth right now, if I read it first or read it after. But the Dan Close, you know, graphic novel Ghost World is usually, it's pretty easy to find. It's in a lot of library collections,
yeah,
from what I've seen. So it's worth checking out. Now, the thing about that, and this is maybe where we, I want to talk about this a little bit as far as, like, how faithful is too faithful, and should comic movies be exactly like storyboards for comics, like Sin City? Ghost World, I think it retains the flavor of the original comic, but it also has a more cinematic direction that was taken. I believe that was directed by Terry Zwigoff.
I believe so, actually.
And, you know, he has his own certain vision, too, that he brings to the film. So it's sort of, like I said, the essence of the comic, but it's not just like a frame-for-frame remake of the comic, which is, I think, sort of what Sin City is more like. And some people really love that. You know, they love that it's so faithful to the comic. I wonder, though, should movies try to emulate exactly what a comic book does, or should they each do what they do best, or does that just not even matter?
What do you think about that, Drew?
Well, I think in some cases it works. In the case of, like, Sin City, it works because of how Frank Miller did Sin City. And but in other cases, I think that you need to take some liberties with maybe the character and the costume design to kind of move it into the film medium. So I think it's kind of a sliding scale.
I think it's hard to find that sweet spot because if there's a number one bitch when a movie comes out like that, it's usually, it's not just like the comic.
Yeah.
I mean, a few famous examples of that kind of thing. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie.
Oh, boy.
Generally just decried by comic fans, yet general people I've talked to that have never read the comic generally like the movie. So usually, you know, like you said, usually we have very different expectations for things that we want from a comic book film. Another film like that I think that that people were disappointed with was, you know, some people were quite upset with the V for Vendetta and the way that that was changed to theoretically reflect this, you know, Bush America kind of atmosphere. So I don't know. It's hard to come up with, I think that, like I said, that sweet spot in there where you stays faithful yet brings something new, because I think that both the Batman movies and the Spider-Man movies do walk that line.
Oh, sure, yeah, definitely. And I mean, you bring up V for Vendetta, and I'm actually kind of glad you did, because that's another movie that I saw first, and then I read through V for Vendetta. And you know what? Honestly, even though they did make changes, it was still faithful enough for me. I mean, obviously, Alan Moore would think differently because, well, Alan Moore hates the quote-unquote bastardization that his works have done over the years because of Hollywood. I really think that the Wachowski brothers did a really damn good job with this movie, and it works incredibly well on screen. But again, you have to distance the two. One of them is the comic V for Vendetta, the other one is the movie V for Vendetta. They're two almost entirely different properties, and I feel that the movie did an amazing job of actually putting out a great movie that was politically relevant for our time, as opposed to, you know, the Churchill era or whichever one that they were.
I think it was Margaret Thatcher. That's what you're talking
about. Margaret Thatcher. There we go. Okay, yeah, Margaret Thatcher. And I mean, at the time, that might have worked perfectly fine for the story, but this day and age, Thatcher is not going to resonate nearly as much as Bush. And, you know, they went for that direction. They found it. I felt that it was very well acted. It's quite possibly the best acting Natalie Portman's done in the movie to date. And I really, really enjoyed the experience. The one thing I didn't enjoy about it, however, was the one Matrix scene they put in there at the end. The flying daggers, I believe it was.
You didn't enjoy that? Because I thought that was actually pretty cool. I was sort of hoping for a little more action in the movie.
Yeah. Over the top. That's the best way to describe it. I mean, you could have very well had that entire scene done with plenty of action without using Matrix time, and they used it because they're the Wachowski brothers and they have to do that at least once a movie.
Well, you know, the thing is with that, though, I'll defend that, because I've heard a lot of people kind of find that moment kind of hokey, but, you know, the truth of the matter is that this guy is supposed to be superhuman, and he's supposed to be super fast and have heightened reflexes. So here's my question. Would it look stupider if they had him, like, jumping around like a jumping bean, or if they did it in slow motion? Which one do you think would be worse?
You know what? Slow motion. Slow motion, I think, actually works there. So I think you might have just changed my decision a little bit. But I would have at least just like to see like a little bit of a medium between the two. You know, get something. You could have slowed it down a little bit, but just not nearly as much as they did, because it just looked it took me out of the film, and that's something that I don't like to see in a movie. But other than that, it was pretty damn good, and I felt that it did a good job of becoming its own as opposed to just being straight from the source material. There is some stuff that's straight from the source material, though, and we got to talk about those also. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the Batman movies. Let's start with the first Batman movies. Let's start with the ones done by Michael Keaton, with, you know, obviously the amazing Joker performance by Jack Nicholson and a whole bunch of other parts. The first Batman movie that was put out in the 80s, what's your take on that? And again, leave Batman Begins out of this. When you first saw in the movies, what did you think of the first Batman? What did you think, Drew?
Well, when I was just a kid at the time, so it was kind of amazing to me. I didn't even know this was a comic book character. And I'm seeing this larger-than-life character on screen, and at the time, it was quite amazing, you know? You get this kind of sense of wonder when you see it, when you're that age. And looking back on it, I think it still works as well as a movie. It's still a good movie. I don't think, you know, if it had never been made and they were to make this again, it wouldn't be the same movie that it was nowadays, you know, if they mm-hmm. made it again this nowadays. So okay. it's kind of I have to separate it in my mind and think of it in that sense.
How was Keaton as Batman? Because and also, how was Keaton as Bruce Wayne? Because those are the two questions you got to ask. Because I felt he was a good Batman, but an absolutely awful Bruce Wayne. I mean, what would you think of that?
I agree. He portrayed Batman as the way you picture Batman. Looking back on it, he was a perfect choice, but he wasn't exactly what I think of as Bruce Wayne.
A bit too brooding. Yeah. I felt
he wasn't bumbling and kind of the playboy enough, in my opinion.
And Matt, Batman for you.
Yeah, this is kind of funny that, I don't know, I think I'm the only one here that was actually probably an adult when that movie came out. It came out in 1989, and I remember, because that was the year I graduated from high school, so I was 17 or 18 years old when that first came out, and I was just literally excited that a good comic book movie was actually coming out, because yeah. Before this, I mean, there really had not been a decent comic book movie since probably... I don't know, was it 82 or something when Superman 2 came out?
Yeah.
I can't really remember. But anyway, I mean, this is like a big deal. It was an exciting deal if you're a comic book fan at the time. You know, it was something that was an event. And I think that because of that fact that I cut that movie so much slack, because when I look at it now and I go back to that movie, it's just ridiculous. I mean, freaking Prince soundtrack to a Batman. I mean, what were they thinking with that? I honestly actually bought the damn Prince tape soundtrack at the time, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of things about that movie, I think, that were just ridiculous. The, you know, love or hate Tim Burton, he created Gotham City as just something of kind of like a whimsical, kind of silly place. And maybe that was more in keeping with this kind of idea that, like, oh, it's a comic book. It's got to be kind of wacky a little bit, a little crazy.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of a silly feel to it. And a lot of people feel like, you know, that wasn't even a Batman movie. It was like a Jack Nicholson hamming it up kind of movie.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. It was more a Joker movie than it was a Batman movie to me.
And, you know, the truth of it is, like, I'm much more excited to see Heath Ledger in the next Batman movie as the Joker than I was seeing Jack Nicholson as the Joker. Mm-hmm. He, you know, it was okay. The movie was decent enough. The only thing that I didn't like about that, really, is that whole movie had... DC basically, they blew up Gotham City... And it was so stupid, man. It was so stupid. In the comic books, they had this thing where it's like, oh, some villain blew up all the buildings in Gotham City, and then somehow underneath those buildings were, like, the Anton first designed buildings that they showed in the movie.
Okay.
And then for like 5 years, then the Gotham City was drawn just the way that the movie Gotham City was drawn, with all those bizarre shapes and weird towers and stuff. I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't know what they were thinking with that, but you know, for a long time, that that came in there. And then the second movie as well. The second movie, you know, again, it was okay. It was a little too over the top, a little too crazy for me. You know, it was decent enough. Much obviously, the first two movies are much better than the second. You know, the next two movies that come after that.
Oh, sure, definitely. I mean, bat nipples.
But again, you know, Michael Keaton is. I mean, when I think, I don't think that there ever has been a perfect person yet playing Batman that I think really meets that Bruce Wayne side as well as the Batman side. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for that person. So, you know, I don't know if there ever is going to be one. Christian Bale, to me, again, you know, he was decent enough, but he was lacking just that little perfect something to be 100% perfect Batman and Bruce Wayne, in my mind.
Okay. Well, I felt he was definitely closer than Michael Keaton was.
Oh,
though,
yeah, because... I won't argue that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually, you know what, I feel also Val Kilmer, when you go on to the third Batman movie, I felt that he was a better Bruce Wayne than he was a Batman.
Yeah, he had that suave, so he has more of a, you know, air, that sophisticated kind of air that plays to that side. I mean, Michael Keaton looks like just some schlub off the street, you know, he doesn't, or a billionaire, you know, whatever. I don't know, do we want to bring up George Clooney at all in this?
Yeah, let's bring him up, because I still feel to this day, it's not Clooney's fault. It really isn't. It's not Clooney's fault that he was in an absolutely dreadful movie. You know, it was the fault of DC for making it in the first place. It was the fault of Warner Brothers for thinking that they needed to go campy on this one. And it was the fault of Arnold Schwarzenegger for being quite possibly the worst Mr. Freeze anybody could ever be.
Yeah, it's not the frozen tumor. You know, I'm not blaming anybody. I think we all can blame Joel Schumacher as a director.
Yeah.
He's the one that holds the cards and decides on, you know, what kind of tone and thing they're going to take with the film.
Oh, yeah.
And this, see, that last Batman movie, I think, brings up a good point, because I'm starting to get a little worried about Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I'm getting a little bit worried about that is, the first one to me was decent. The origin stuff was kind of boring. The second one just blew my mind because it was just pure action, you know, drama. Like Drew said, you know, it went back to that Lee and John Romita story, you know, Spider-Man No More, all that kind of geek stuff that I thought was great. And now the third one looks cool. You know, it looks cool. The trailer looks cool. But we keep hearing about how they're adding all these characters, 3, 4, 5 villains and other characters in the movie. And I'm just... You know, we all remember that Batman movie with Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy, and then you had Robin, then you had freaking Batgirl and Batman.
Ugh.
And, I don't know, there was like 8 people in that movie.
Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl. Jeez.
Yes. Pure gold.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
but...
I don't think I'm full of crap with that, worrying. I trust Sam Raimi much more than Joel Schumacher. Let me just throw that out there.
Well, that's another reason why I feel that we're going to get a good Spider-Man 3, because it's been the same director all this way. I mean, obviously, there were major directorial changes in the Batman franchise the first time around, and we're sticking with the same guy here. We're sticking with the same cast also. That's another major mistake, the major mistake that the Batman franchise did. They weren't able to keep the same cast. When you can't keep the same Batman, every movie is going to seem a little bit different. Well, you got Tobey Maguire, you've got why can't I think of her name all of a sudden? Kirsten Dunst, and I mean, you've got all the main players from the first few movies back for this one, so it's bound to be good. It has to be good. If it's not good, it is the fault of Sam Raimi, and I mean, because really, how could you go wrong with the same players that made Spider-Man 2 so amazing?
Well, you know, the thing is, and I don't know if, since this has been in the trailer, I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, but...
Just in case, spoiler warning.
If you're really anal, just, I guess, fast forward it, but, because this is what this is the thing that worries me a little bit, is just the simple fact that here's what's supposedly going to have to happen now. apparently at some point Peter gets the symbiote costume somehow.
Yeah.
And we don't know how or where. I'm assuming that he's probably going to be on campus at college and some weird accident's going to happen or something probably. And that's, so he's going to have the symbiote costume. He's going to have it for a while so that he can get corrupted by it. He's going to have to then get rid of it. It's going to have to then take over Eddie Brock, and it's going to have to then come back, and he has to fight it as Venom. Now, that's a lot of crap to happen in 2 hours, but on top of that now, he has to fight the Sandman. Mm-hmm. He has to also deal with Harry Osborn as the Boy Goblin or whatever he's going to be called. And, you know, that's a lot of stuff to have to deal with in a two-hour film.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think we're actually not going to see Venom, or at least true Venom, until Spider-Man 4.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be introduced by the end of the movie, and that's a great cliffhanger to have right there. Hey, I'm Venom. I'm going to kick your ass. And scene.
Well, I hope so. At the San Diego Comic-Con, they showed footage of actually Venom with his tongue flapping around. So I hope that you're right. You know, that would be a better thing to have happen. That's, you know, for next time. But I don't know if they're going to, you know, have that kind of foresight, because I don't know if these same people, are they committed to yet another film?
I believe Raimi is. I'm not quite certain about the cast, though.
Yeah. I thought Tobey Maguire was going to be, was hoping to do it for another movie or so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure their contracts end with this movie.
Okay, but yeah, because Kirsten, I know, doesn't want to do a fourth. I know that.
Yeah, so, which is why I think they're introducing, spoiler warning, Gwen Stacy in this one.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I forgot about. So they're going to have to put that story in. Now, is she going to, spoiler warning for a 40-year-old comic book, is she going to die in this film? Or are we going to have her in there, you know, for the next film?
Spoiler warning, I wouldn't be surprised if Mary Jane dies, because enough spoiler warnings, but I honestly would not be surprised if Mary Jane dies this time around as opposed to Gwen, because, well, what better way to get rid of a character than to just kill her off? Yeah. Mind you, I'm not sure I would want to see that, but that might be the route they go. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That might be a little too dark, I don't know.
And I'm hoping what Ian's saying comes true with the way Peter would get rid of the symbiote, and then, like, at the last scene, you see Eddie Brock. I don't know, if they do it like they did it in the comics, then he'd be like, what was it, at the church or something?
Yeah, because, well, they showed that in the preview, that he's up in the bell tower, and he's ripping it up.
Yeah, because that's how he got rid of it.
Right. That's very similar to that original story in the Web of Spider-Man way back when he first got rid of it. So, yeah, it seems like it's sticking pretty close. I hope that they do a good job. I mean, Venom really got to be so overexposed during the 90s boom that...
Oh, please.
A lot of people are really disappointed to see him show up in the film. You know, I kind of agree there are a lot of other classic Spider-Man villains that are out there that haven't been tapped yet, but I don't mind Venom. I didn't mind him when he first came out, and if he's done well, it really creates that kind of dark opposite character, which we see a lot. And I think that is exemplified by the fact that, you know, they got Topher Grace playing Eddie Brock. He's not some hulking, big, gigantic, you know, muscle man guy. He's just the same kind of build and size as Tobey Maguire. They're sort of like, you know, dark opposites, and I hope that they're going to play it that way, because that would make a lot more sense.
I think that Topher Grace also is just the perfect choice. I didn't think it at first, actually, but with time, I went around to the same idea that you have, Matt, that what better way to do it than a guy who, if I remember correctly, actually auditioned for the part of Peter Parker once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a guy who has very similar build to Tobey Maguire and, you know, really literally would be like Dark Spider-Man.
So I'm just interested. I'm curious to see how they're going to introduce the costume, like what because we've gotten way different methods over the years. You know, obviously the suit first appeared in Secret Wars number 8, old timers. On the set, you know, that Saturday morning 90s cartoon, it was some kind of spaceship thing or something. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. John Jameson was on a trip to the moon and got this isotope back that turned out to be a symbiote.
Okay, so see, there's been
different
interpretations.
I grew up on that thing. So
how did Venom get explained in the Ultimate Spider-Man?
in Ultimate Spider-Man,
it was a cure for cancer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a cure for cancer, and also Eddie Brock is actually Eddie Brock Jr. in the Ultimate Universe, because Eddie Brock Sr. worked with Peter's father.
All right. Now, maybe they'd go with that version for the film. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Or if they'll just make up a new one or something totally unrelated to any of those other ones, but...
Well, who knows? It could just show up, you know? I mean, maybe we're not supposed to know exactly how it got there.
This is what they're going to do. They're going to have him at the beginning of the movie. He's going to be on the Beyonder planet in the Secret War.
Oh, man. Well, they are making an Avengers movie, so...
Well, the thing I was thinking of is they introduced John Jameson in the last movie.
Yeah.
And so they introduced him as an... Didn't they introduce him as an astronaut? So...
They did, yeah.
So it could end up being like the old cartoon series.
That's true. Well, I keep hoping that they're going to have John Jameson turn up as Man-Wolf. So.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
That would be awesome. That would be totally awesome. And I mean, they just actually reintroduced Man-Wolf in the She-Hulk series recently, mm-hmm. so I would love to see a little bit more of that. What do you think of the costume itself? I mean, obviously it's a bit of a different take on the black costume. It's just pretty much a black version of the Spider-Man suit with a little bit of a larger emblem than the classic red and blue has. I mean, obviously movies do take liberty with costumes, and they're certainly taking major liberties with the black suit. I mean, Drew, do you have any qualms with it, or?
Well, I guess my problem is, what's wrong with the one that's in the comics? That's the only thing. I mean, I saw somebody did a mock-up of the one from the movie poster.
Gorgeous,
yeah, too. And it looks like it would work. Maybe they tried it in the motion tests and it didn't work, but I could totally see the original comic book version working, but... It works for what they're doing with it, so... What I think they're doing with it, at least.
Matt, I mean, do you like it? I mean...
Well, you know, obviously, I would rather that it be much more like the original costume from the comics as well. That white and black design is way more distinctive. This costume just sort of looks like somebody forgot to turn the tint on their TV screen.
Yeah.
But it's got the same exact, like, webbing pattern running through it, and it's got all that same stuff, just black.
Spider-Man went swimming through the Hudson and ended up covered in oil.
Yeah, I mean, at first, you know, I did notice they, like you said, they did change the emblem to slightly, you know, change it a little bit. So, but I'd rather that it was different. Maybe it's just they thought it looked too goofy, or they, like Drew said, that they just couldn't get it to work otherwise. But I don't know. I think the one thing that's kind of interesting about the Spider-Man movies is that they're good enough that most of us are willing to forgive a lot of gaffes.
Yeah.
That they make. You know, I remember at the time originally that everyone was so up in arms about the whole organic web shooters thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at this point, while I'd rather that the comic book character actually still be true to his original origin, I don't care that the movie character does that. It just doesn't bother me. And that led into more of a, you know, that in Spider-Man 2, where the fact that he was losing his powers and things, that made much more sense that way than if he had, you know, mechanical web shooters. So I don't mind.
Yeah, and what I was wondering about when the first movie came out, because I wasn't a huge Spider-Man fan at that time, but I had read the comics and when I was younger and such, so I knew about the whole symbiote suit and everything. And what I was wondering is, if the web shooters are organic, then if they introduce Venom, how is that suit going to be special, you know?
That was one of the things about the Venom suit, was that, you know, it did generate its own webbing. Another thing about it was that it could morph into other shapes. So
Peter
would just wear, you know, turn into street clothes. And I don't know if they're going to do that in the film.
Yeah, but when I thought about that, I'm like, that's kind of not the greatest feature to have with your suit. I'm thinking maybe he might lose his powers or something, because he was having trouble with it in the last movie. So.
What? I'm thinking that they might go more the route of the Ultimate Venom, where actually, as opposed to using web shooters, or shooting webs, period, this Venom actually extends himself, similar to what Carnage does, where his symbiote actually literally just extends itself and swings on itself. Which could make a little bit of sense there. I mean, you could just have him literally swinging from building to building on an extension of the symbiote. You know, I mean, that could work movie-wise here, so, yeah. Now, speaking of costumes, actually, I mean, there have been a lot of costume changes in the world of comic book movies. I mean, you've had a major change, and I actually want to talk about these movies because it actually goes into a post on the forums that was made by Matthew Guy, so let's actually segue over to these. In my opinion, the best franchise, well, at least up to Superman 3, was the Superman franchise. And you had a major, major change in the outfit from Superman and Superman 2 and 3 and 4 to Superman Returns. And Superman Returns is technically Superman 3 done in, like, say, an alternate reality, if you want to call it that way. Because, you know, he comes back and Superman 3 never happened. Richard Pryor is stricken from the record and all is well with the world. Major difference on the costume, though.
Yeah.
I miss Superman smoking the Black Tar Kryptonite cigarette and turning into a bad guy. No, you know what? As long as we're talking about that, I mean, just costumes in general. As far as what was wrong with Superman Returns, the costume, in my opinion, was the least of my concerns. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it had some kind of nice return to the old Golden Age costume elements. But it's kind of, it wasn't the problem with the movie.
So it looks like I'm in the minority here. How about that? I really, really enjoyed the movie, but, well, Drew, what was your problem with Superman Returns?
Well, I had a couple problems. I mean, it wasn't a bad movie, in my opinion. I thought it was a pretty good movie, but the suit, in my opinion, didn't really detract from the movie. So, I guess that's what I meant.
Okay.
I'm ready to go on my list of things that I want to talk about with that.
Okay.
So. Let's go, Matt. The floor is yours.
Well, no, again, I have the same feeling. Like, I didn't go to see this movie around when it first came out. I waited about a month or something after, and then I went to see it in the theater. See, this is the thing. Like, again, I was, like, 8 or something when the first movie came out. And that movie always just made a very large impression on me. And if you go back and watch it today, you know, obviously the effects are quite lame by today's standards. But there's just something about it. I mean, the way that it was filmed in the original Kansas, and were just filmed in such a sweeping, broad, like, beautiful style. And then when he kind of shifted to Metropolis, you know, it was a little kind of goofier, a little sillier, but still, you know, it was a good, solid film. Now, number two was, to my kid mind, was just like a total overload, because it was just pure geek action of these big hairy guys shooting eye beams at each other. And of course that was cool. Now, I don't know how, you know, as far as standing up as great cinema today, I'm not sure that I would agree with that. But, you know, the thing with Superman Returns, what got me is that I am someone from that generation that Singer was trying to appeal to with this nostalgia factor. Because obviously there's this huge nostalgia factor. The theme song, the titles of the movie, you know, the way they flew in and all that kind of stuff was just straight out of the Superman original films. The Marlon Brando voice, like, all that stuff. And I love that, but my problem with it is it feels like that it's a $200 million wasted opportunity. Because, you know, you look at something like Batman Begins, which is a total reimagining of the character. And I think that worked better, because to me, as I was watching through Superman Returns, there were some great action scenes. You know, the airplane rescue scene that was very similar to the Man of Steel John Byrne first issue. That was spectacular, you know. Those some amazing effects. But the problem is that we didn't get enough of that kind of thing. And Singer, just for some reason, even though this is sort of a pseudo-sequel to the other films, it's almost just like a remake as well. He goes back, he uses exact same dialogue lines from the first film in several places. I want to see a 2006 Lex Luthor. I want to see a criminal mastermind. I don't want to see, like, the bumbling land deal guy from the 70s movies.
I almost expected that music that they played in the old Superman movies to play when they had Lex Luthor on the screen in this one.
You know, and that's the thing. That's what kind of got me, is I just feel like he had this opportunity to totally reimagine the character. He was so caught up in doing what's already been done that a lot of that opportunity was lost. And from the way things are sounding, the film, box office-wise, seems to have done less than what they hoped.
Less than what they hoped, but they have made their money back. So, and actually, they're continuing to get box office gross internationally, which was the important thing. And DVD sales, obviously, are probably going to be huge, as would be expected. So they are considering doing the sequel that they had planned. It's still up in the air, but it probably will end up happening.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm glad. I want there to be another movie, because if that's the last movie that we get, it'd be a real shame, because it was just so similar to the original. And, you know, we've spent the last 20 years, and we've watched Smallville for the last 5 years. We've gotten a different take on who Lex Luthor is and who Lex Luthor should be. And to me, in my mind, like you said, in 2006, and even ever since the Man of Steel series, you know, he's more of a controlling, you know, criminal mastermind kind of brilliant guy. Not quite the bumbling, foolish more guy that we saw in the original films. So I wish we could have seen a little bit more originality. The only thing that was different is the fact that we didn't have Otis, but instead we had Kumar, who never, I swear to God, he did not say one word in that movie. He just sat there.
He didn't.
He grimaced at people. Kumar, what are you doing?
Oh, God. Well, you know what, honestly, when it comes to Lex Luthor, I can sort of see where you're coming from, but at the same time, I did feel that there was a much more menacing vibe to Lex Luthor in this movie than there were in the originals. I mean, I felt that they got the perfect person to play him. I mean, Kevin Spacey did an amazing, amazing job, and he did put his own take on it. It wasn't like he was playing Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. This was a brand new Kevin Spacey Lex Luthor, but I can understand that you sort of wanted a bit more of the, criminal mastermind as opposed to the I'm going to take over the world through real
Well, actually, you know what? I actually thought that he was doing sort of a Gene Hackman playoff when he was doing that role. But maybe that was just me. I don't know. And it's not like I hated it. I just felt like it was almost a wasted opportunity, like covering old ground that we've already seen before. As far as what did you think? Did you think that you were being hit over the head once too many times with the Christ imagery?
You know what? As a Jewish person, I'm actually surprised I wasn't. Let's put it that way, because I had heard a lot going into it. I heard that, watch out, because there's going to be a hell of a lot of that, and I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. It's not like I haven't seen it before in my life, and you know what? It wasn't nearly as over the top as I thought it was going to be. I felt that it was enough where you could sort of just put it to the side and like, okay, fine, yeah, sure, he's going to save us all, there you go, okay, great, there he is, he looks like he's on a cross, how terrific is that, blah, 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 let's move on to the next scene. They weren't my favorite scenes in the movie when they went to the Christ allegory, but it didn't take me out of the movie like I expected it to, because they weren't like, wow, God sent him here, blah, 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 blah. It was
pretty close to that, though.
But in essence, though, that's how the character was in the first place. I mean, Jor-El sends his last son, his only son, to Earth to save people. Gee, what does that sound like to me? What does that sound like to you?
See, I agree with that to a certain extent, except that interpretation of the character, I don't think that really came around until more recently. You know, obviously, Siegel and Shuster did not create this character to be a Christ analog.
Sure, they were both Jewish.
So, that's the thing. I mean, I don't really mind it. I think it was a little heavy-handed. As you mentioned, the lines that Jor-El quotes is just like almost a direct quote out of the Bible. And then there's that one scene where he's in space where he literally basically throws his arms out and has his legs together, which was just like, oh, man. But, other than that, I don't mind that. But let's talk about other things. Because we were talking about changes in movies. Like I said, the organic web shooters in Spider-Man, no big deal. Super Baby, big deal?
Big deal, definitely. I mean, I didn't think we would see Superboy in this way. I mean, I really did not think they were going to go that route. And, well, now there have been some rumors that they might be actually taking that into the DC universe at one point or another. I don't think they will, because I think it's way too early to be pulling something like that with Superman. But you know what? That was the one part of the movie where I loved it. It was a big shock when I saw it. But after I got out of the theater, I'm like, so what the hell are they going to do with this now?
Yeah, exactly. That was my reaction was very similar to that. Because, this is like a huge change. This isn't just, a different costume or whatever. This is like a huge, huge change event for this character. That there's now a little kid who is Superman's son that exists, that had never existed in the comics, never existed in, other than the kind of alternate reality stories that we've gotten. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I don't really want to see Super Baby in the next film. You know, I don't want this to be like a Spy Kids adventure or something with Soup Dad and Soup Baby flying around being criminals. I mean, that's... I guess that you got to do something. The Lois Clark relationship has just been at such a kind of stagnant standstill for a while that maybe this seems like a natural progression. But I
plus we'll have to have stops in a movie for a Super Baby to take his super inhaler for his super asthma every now and then. So
it was quite strange. That character was just. I really wish they hadn't gone there and left a little more to the imagination, maybe. But I guess the cat's out of the bag.
I mean, Drew, what do you think of Superman Jr.?
Well, honestly, with the Super Baby, I when I saw it, I just brushed past it because I kind of figured that it was going to happen anyway. When they said Lois Lane has a baby in the previews, I'm thinking, all right.
that guy said, yeah, Lois Lane's a mommy.
Yeah.
That's how he said it a million times.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Urson, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. When you think about it, it's kind of stupid because it kind of backs him into a corner. But
super child support?
Yes. Super deadbeat dad.
There you go.
Oh, man. I'd actually love to see Peter David write that story. Super deadbeat dad.
In Elseworlds, kind of.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's talk about... We talk about Marvel, we talk about DC. We want to talk about the X-Men films because those are the other big three that have been quite popular.
Well, before I go there, I want to quickly do a little bit on Matthew Guy's post here, which mostly has to do with the Superman movies. So here is his post. My guilty pleasures of the Superman movies that rank in this order: Superman the movie, the A-plus comic book movie standard for all superhero movies. Superman 2, another A-plus movie with the most quoted line amongst all Superman fans: kneel before Zod. Superman 3, a movie with a great subplot about Clark going back to Smallville and reuniting with the other LL in his life, Lana Lang, evil Superman fighting Clark Kent was the moment of the movie. Robert Vaughn as the villain was subpar. Supergirl, not better than Superman 3, but no worse than Superman 4. And the Dutch Elm Disease of Superman Movie Award goes to Superman 4, Quest for Peace. Very little redeemable value, except for the last Christopher Reeve gets in the cape and red boots one last time. A very low C-rated movie among Superman fans. And the Superman Returns is the unofficial Superman 3 that is the greatest companion in all respects to the first two Superman movies made by Richard Donner, making a true Superman trilogy a B-plus among Superman movies, rates only slightly below Superman 2. Catwoman is the worst superhero movie ever. Burn the negatives of this film and deny the film's existence at all costs. As for Daredevil, see the Daredevil from the Incredible Hulk reunion movie, the Trial of the Incredible Hulk TV movie over the Affleck movie. Ouch. You will be glad you did. The eventual death of superhero movies will not happen until all known comics are out of print, because we all know Hollywood would die from thinking of an original idea on its own. They will rob the superhero piggy bank as long as it turns a big enough profit for Warner Brothers and from DC and Marvel Entertainment from Marvel. And that's Matthew Guy. Well, before we get into the X-Men movies and all that, do we want to talk worst comic book movies? Just quickly here, because he did mention Catwoman and Daredevil as two of his worst. And, well, Catwoman definitely is one of the worst, but I have to say, out of all of them, I had the pleasure to see that Fantastic Four unreleased, and oh god, homoerotic hug scene between Reed and Ben, that was when I stopped watching. It was pathetic.
Oh, man. You know what, though, the thing I'll say about that Corman film, is as crappy as it may be, the Thing costume in that is way better than the one in the new movie.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah,
I agree. It looks more like the Thing in the comics than the new one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what the thing is? Like, I don't know what movie I think is the worst, because I really, honestly, if a movie is really bad, I won't see it. I don't care if it's a comic book movie or not. Like Catwoman, I have not ever seen that, and I don't ever plan to see it. I've never seen Elektra. I don't ever plan to see it. As far as movies that I have seen, I mean, Daredevil was pretty mediocre, pretty underwhelming to me. And I haven't seen that director's cut version, so I don't know if that's better.
It is better than the original one.
It is better because it has Coolio in it, and anything with Coolio is automatically awesome.
Yeah, well, come on.
The Hulk movie, again, it was I didn't hate it like some people seem to. It was just very mediocre to me. It didn't thrill me or disgust me. It was just kind of there. otherwise, I mean, all the movies from the 80s and the 70s, pretty much, except for Superman, the original movie. God, those Captain America movies where he drove around on a motorcycle.
Oh, no.
His windshield was the shield, plexiglass shield that he threw. The Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man movies where he looked like, you know, he shot ropes out of his wrist and all.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those, you know, anything that happened, any of those movies that came up just were usually uniformly horrible until Marvel actually decided, hey, we better actually, you know, put some money into this for once.
Yeah, we can't just throw $10 in a film student graduate.
I'm a big, huge Captain America fan, but I've never seen that 80s Captain America movie with the Italian Red Skull and the rubber ears on the side of the mask. So
I'm going to make you a pizza and kick your ass.
Man, so I haven't seen that.
Well, I very much hope that the Captain America movie that they're planning is going to be a hell of a lot better than that one will ever, ever be. Because if it's not, that is pretty pathetic. That's all I really have to say.
It can't be any worse.
Yeah.
That's very much true there. I forget, what famous writer's like son or something along those lines?
J.D. Salinger's son, Matt Salinger.
There you go. Yeah, Matt Salinger is Captain America. Brilliant idea, folks. Brilliant.
I know. Just think about that family, man. What a letdown.
From Catcher in the Rye to Captain America.
So, okay, X-Men.
X-Men. Again, definitely.
First movie, I'll just lay it out there for you again. Like I said, the first movie for me was just, it was good, and it was kind of a geek thing to see it, and, you know, all my favorite characters on screen. Didn't like the costumes, and I thought it was a little ponderous. The first movie, just a little too much backstory, a little too much origin information. Just kind of like Spider-Man 1. The second movie came out and just like blew my mind. It kicked ass all over the place. And that was my favorite all-time comic book movie, probably until Spider-Man 2 then came out the next year or whatever it was after that one. And then the X-Men 3, I don't know, very middle of the road. Again, they tried to cram too many storylines into one film. They killed off a bunch of characters for no reason. And, you know, all in all, it was pretty mediocre. So I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, you could very well, and I mentioned this on a previous episode, so those of you who want to hear my full X-Men 3 review, you can just listen to one of the old ones. But, and that was back in the old days, too. That was Toby and David and myself. Wow, I'm having flashbacks now. But honestly, you could very easily bring back everyone who died in that movie. It's kind of sad to say, but because it's a comic book, you can. You never see Cyclops' body. That's number one. Number two, Phoenix is sort of good at rising from the dead. So even though she's gone, you could very easily bring her back. And also, you could pretty much have an X-Men 4 with a lot of the characters that were introduced in X-Men 3. I mean, Colossus and Kitty, and you could have Iceman, obviously, back. If you want Storm back, you could have her, although who would want her back? You know, I mean, you could really get a good one going. X-Men 3 was all right. It wasn't perfect. I felt it did the job. And Kelsey Grammer as a Beast was excellent. That was the best casting choice you could have possibly had. It was brilliant. I loved it. X-Men 2... hell of a lot better. Hell of a lot better. One of the best comic book movies I've ever seen, and it will continue to be one of the best comic book movies I've ever seen. And X-Men, the original X-Men, is great. It's a great movie, but it's also great because of that one great line. How can I tell it's really you? You're a dick. That to me, it's the one of the few lines that survived from Joss Whedon's original script for X-Men, and it was by far one of the best conversations that Cyclops and Wolverine have ever had on the screen. So I'm good with that.
It's for you and me when we're trying to decide whether or not we're each other. So.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Yes, yes. Oh, my God. But also at the same time, I did sort of like that whole Brokeback speech that Wolverine and Cyclops had going in X-Men 3. You know, like, you don't know me, man. You don't know me, but I'm here for you. But you don't know me, man. That was fantastic. But I don't know. I mean, X-Men 3 could have been a lot better than it was. Had they kept with the same director, it would have been much better. But he didn't do nearly as bad a job as he could have, Brett Ratner. I mean, had he done Superman, and I said this before also, had he done Superman and Bryan Singer did X-Men, we would have had a better X-Men movie, but a crappier Superman movie. Well, I definitely think that would have happened, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Drew, I mean, what do you think of the X-Men franchise? I mean, which would be your favorite, 1, 2, or 3?
2 is my favorite, without a doubt. But I did like the third one for a number of reasons. One being one of my favorite mutants was finally on screen in that one. It was Jamie Madrox.
Oh, and those were great scenes too.
Yeah,
and he was wearing his outfit. He was wearing his current outfit. I mean, you can't get better than that.
I'm kind of hoping that they do kind of a X Factor type spinoff of where he's like asked by the government to lead an X Factor or something. But
that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's gonna happen. But
you could have Sam Jackson in it. That'd be great.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so I'd say 3 and 1 rank about the same in my mind. 3 has some problems, but so did 1 in the fact that it was mainly just an origin story. You didn't get really into the meat of the stories and stuff until you got to number 2. And then there's too many stories in 3, so...
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, are we literally wasting a whole film all the time with these franchises by having to give the origins of the characters?
Yes, we are, but it's necessary, because obviously there are folks out there that are not reading comic books that are being introduced to these characters for the first time. If you assume that the only people that are going to see this film are people who read comic books, well, then you're not going to get those millions and millions of dollars that you wanted to get in the first place. There's a reason why X-Men was such a great hit, because, well, it introduced the characters to everybody who did not know them, and, well, it made them film stars. You know, it didn't just make them comic book characters, and you have to do that with these movies. You really do.
Well, I wonder if you do. I mean, I think the general public knows Superman's origin. I don't think that's necessary. I think the general public knows Batman's origin, and I think the general public even knows Spider-Man's origin. Some of these other characters, maybe, you know, I don't know. But it just seems like that every time we get a film, the first movie is always, always wasted on having to do an origin, no matter how many times it comes back. And that's, you know, when I say wasted, like, but, you know, like we're talking about, these three franchises, the second movie is the best.
Yeah.
The first one's always okay, but it's too much, you know, introduction, too much backstory. So, I don't know. Part of me, you know, for some of these characters, I just like to see what would happen if they just, you know, went full bore right, you know, right away, and maybe weaved in the origin somehow a little less obtrusively.
Yeah. Do you think Batman Begins might have done that? I mean, do you feel that Batman Begins wasted too much time on an introduction, or?
Well, you know what? I really would, again, I'm looking more forward to the second film because we can just get right into it, and I want to see what's going to happen. The Batman Begins movie was a little bit different because it gave us an origin, really, that we had not seen.
Yeah, or we never saw it when he went overseas to train and stuff.
Right, so that was something kind of new that we hadn't seen, at least in any of the movies before. So that was a little bit more interesting, but even so, I mean, let's be honest, you know, the film comes alive when he gets the suit on.
Yeah.
And that's like an hour into the film. So, you know, I didn't dislike those original scenes. They're interesting, but, you know, again, I'm much more looking forward to the second film where we can just go into it and see, you know, what happens.
I can understand that. Did you guys see the Blade trilogy? I'm actually one of the few who really hasn't.
No, I've never seen either of those films, or the TV show, for that matter.
What about you, Drew? I mean, have you seen Blade?
Yeah, I actually have them on my shelf.
Okay.
So I didn't pay full price for
them. What did you think of those?
I liked the first two a lot. I thought the first one was good, and I liked the second one a lot, which was directed by the guy who directed Hellboy, Guillermo del Toro, and I like those, the first two, a lot, and I thought the third one was very flawed as far as the way it is, but I still own it. I guess the entire series is pretty, I mean, the entire trilogy is pretty decent as far as...
Okay. Now, actually, to go with the idea of all spans of comic book movies to sort of get close to the end here, Independence, we haven't really touched too many on those except for what we listed as our favorites, as two of our favorites were sort of independents. I mean, you have Sin City, which is technically an independent. You have stuff like Viva Vendetta, which, mind you, is under the Vertigo line, understandable, but that one was pretty much an independent at first. And you have stuff like maybe like Mystery Men, The Crow, and stuff like The Shadow back in the day, and all these other comic book films that came out. Now, some of them went the route of having an origin. Others sort of just went full blast into it. I would think of obviously, Ghost World didn't bother with an origin because there really wasn't any need for it. Stuff like Sin City, there was really no origin there either. This was, you know, the first Sin City story that was told in the comic books. There was no real backstory needed on any of these characters. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of the independent comic movies? I mean, do you feel that they do something that the mainstream comic movies do not? Or do you feel they're sort of in the same category?
Well, you know what? There's actually, for me, there's two different categories of independent movies, because if you want to talk about stuff like Sin City, and then as Drew brought up, you know, Hellboy, that's, you know, there's nothing different from Hellboy or Batman or X-Men or Superman. I mean, they're all just special effects, superheroic characters. You know, there's nothing independent or different about that as far as the public is concerned. So the other category, what I would consider to be independent movies, and I would almost call them stealth comic movies, because a lot of times they don't want people to know these were comic books, because they want them to take it seriously. And things I'm thinking about in that category would be like Road to Perdition.
Yes.
A movie I really liked, History of Violence.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else. You know, like you said, Ghost World.
I think you could even put like The Crow or Constantine into that kind of category that a lot of people didn't know they were comic book movies.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, you know, honestly, and this might just be me thinking this, you could even put Sin City in there. Because there are stylized movies like that that just come out. It didn't have to be from a comic book. I mean, sure, it was from a comic book, but, you know, non-comic book fans could see that movie and just appreciate it for what it was.
And then you have, like, other movies like Men in Black and Mystery Men, which they're very much what Matt was saying about them being kind of stealth comic book movies.
You know, that's kind of funny. I really like Mystery Men. I know a lot of people hate that movie, but, you know, that's a group of characters that came out of Bob Burden's Flaming Carrot comic series. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I find it quite amusing for some reason. Otherwise, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we haven't mentioned. I'm sure there are, but...
Yeah. Tank Girl?
Well, it's a comic movie. I never saw it. It looked kind of silly to me. I guess I'm not a huge, what is it, Lori Petty?
Yeah.
That was Tank Girl in that movie. I don't know. I never read those books, really, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and we never mentioned actually one of my favorite comic book movies that I didn't mention before, but it was one of my favorites when I was younger, which was The Rocketeer.
Ah! I completely forgot about it, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's actually one of my faves.
Yeah, I loved that movie, so...
Yeah, and again, that's another one that it's because it's a period piece, and it, Dave Stevens' stuff was such an homage to kind of the old classic serials and stuff. So that's not even really, again, overtly obvious that was a comic book movie, and I enjoyed it, although I don't think it did very well as far as box office.
Yeah, I'm looking at the gross right now. It grossed $46 million.
Okay,
so not
that's
terribly.
not terrible. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was like, was it the early 90s?
Yeah, it was 91.
Okay, there you go.
Okay. Damien actually had some stuff that he wanted to touch on. That's, of course, Ward Shaper on the forums and the guy who does our Rogues Gallery, which actually will be in about 2 weeks here on Comic Timing. I enjoy a lot of comic book movies, though I have to admit that I turned off Catwoman about 15 minutes into it because it just made my skin crawl. But I look at my DVD shelves, I have 30 different movies and then some TV series like The Tick and The Flash, which I just adore. I even recently rewatched Judge Dredd, and after cringing when he took his helmet off, I think that movie just succumbed to bad writing. I'm sure if someone decent got to the character, we could have a really good Dredd story. I am the law. My favorites, I'd have to admit, are Blade 2, The Crow, Mystery Men, for the fact that it's just a fun movie where most of it was ad-libbed, Batman Begins, and Sin City. I did like Daredevil, though I do agree that the Kingpin shouldn't have been black, and apart from that, I don't know why people didn't like it, and I have to admit that I like how in Daredevil, the list of fighters that went down to Matt's father were some of the best creators of the comic, Bendis, Miller, etc. My guilty pleasure, though, would have to be Tank Girl. I love that movie, though. It's just so odd, but that's how the Tank Girl universe is, since eventually she gives birth to the baby Tank, with her Tank being the father. But that's enough for me now. And that's Damien Smith. So.
Gee, I wonder why I never read that or watched those. That sounds
golly gee whiz.
Isn't that guy that did the Tank Girl, didn't he go on to do that whole Gorillaz band thing?
I think he might have, actually. Yeah, I think he was.
I can't remember his name, but...
Something like that, yeah. But he did mention Judge Dredd, and that's a perfect example of let's get a guy who has a big name and put him on a... you know, a superhero movie and, or at least some sort of comic book movie, and just put a movie out. Don't even care how it's written or how it's scripted, just put the movie out, because let's just get a big name for it. An example of that, obviously, would be Shaquille O'Neal's Steal, because that was dreadfully disgusting. And they put it out only because Shaquille O'Neal wanted to do the movie. And, you know, they barely even had anything to do with the Superman universe. And Judge Dredd is, yeah, that goes in the annals of bad, in my opinion.
You know what, like, I'll come out and admit that I haven't seen that Judge Dredd movie, but, I mean, to be honest, Lord Shaper, you know, he's an Australian, and so I'm sure that he's much more into Judge Dredd than the typical American is.
Yeah.
Let's face it, most Americans, myself included, I have no connection to that character. I know what he looks like, and that's about it. So to attract an American audience, that's understandable to me that you would want, you got to Americanize it up somehow, or make it relevant to this audience. I mean, if they were making that as an independent film aimed at Brits or something, I'm sure it would be a whole different beast. But, you know, maybe I guess chalked it up to a noble failure or something, that they were trying to appeal to too many different groups, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Have you seen Judge Dredd, Drew? Or?
Yeah, it's been a long time since I saw it. I saw it again when I was younger, so it was like I was sneaking Judge Dredd in to watch it, and it I didn't like it then either, so.
Hey, it was like one of the first appearances of Rob Schneider. How could you not like that?
Oh, ho, ho. Yeah. And also, his comment about Daredevil, actually, about the Kingpin, I'm actually completely disagreeing with that. I feel Michael Clark Duncan did an amazing job as the Kingpin. I felt nobody else would have really been able to pull it off. But Ben Affleck is my problem with that movie, because he is not anywhere near what I want to see out of a Daredevil or a Matt Murdock, for that matter, because I don't think smart when I think Ben Affleck. I just don't. And, well, he's supposed to be a lawyer. And Ben Affleck doesn't play a convincing lawyer, period.
Man, how many lawyers do you know? I don't think they have to be smart, necessarily, to be lawyers.
No, I'm talking Matt Murdock here, Matt. And again, it's a comic book. In the comic books, Matt Murdock is a smart guy, so.
Well, you know, see, the thing is for me, like, the Daredevil I know is the Frank Miller Daredevil, really. I never got on the whole Bendis wagon. So to me, I had no problem with the casting. It didn't bother me at all. I just think that where that story went awry is just trying to force feed in that romance angle, doing a lot of things that just didn't work. And that's why I think that the director's cut, maybe I need to see that and see if that fixes a lot of that, because I heard that it does, so.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Maybe. I should probably add that to my Netflix queue myself, because I've always meant to see the director's cut, but never have. Because, again, Coolio's in it. It's bound to be good. let's get some final
thoughts. Gangster's Paradise, as they say.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. And without Gangster's Paradise, we'd have never had Amish Paradise, so.
Man, speaking of which, I'm assuming that you guys have all heard the White and Nerdy song.
No, I haven't, actually.
You haven't heard that? That's Weird Al's newest song that's been leaked to the internet. It's a parody of Chingy's whatever Riding Dirty song. So if you can go look it up on, I think the video's on YouTube, but the song is floating around out there too. It's pretty funny.
I'm gonna have to find that, because, well, that sort of describes three quarters of the world of comic book characters. So
yeah, there's a lot of references in there to stuff like I don't know, computer games, geek stuff, talking Klingon, different weird things. But it was pretty funny. Now, before we wrap up, though, any other movies that we've forgotten?
I'm
running through my list right now.
Yeah,
we could talk about movies that are coming out.
Oh, actually, you know what? There's one movie that I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. One movie, it's not coming out yet, but it's in the works, and I want to see whether or not you guys would want to see this movie made or not. Watchmen.
No.
Watchmen is in development. It had a great script from what I've seen, the previous script. However, it looks like they're going to rewrite that script. So I'm not quite sure if it's going to be nearly as good. The same guy who wrote X-Men and a couple other movies wrote the script for Watchmen and apparently did an amazing job at it, but he's no longer attached to the product.
It's not that David Hayter guy, is it?
No, I think it was Goyer, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think it was Goyer. So, and Goyer has done a pretty good job. Again, I could be wrong on this. If anybody wants to correct me, they can go ahead and do so.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry, and it says David Hayter.
Oh, it is Hayter?
That guy, by the way, was the voice of Solid Snake, if you didn't know
that. I was going to say that if you weren't going
to
say it, so.
Crab battle.
It's funny, because he kind of looks like Solid Snake, too.
Otakon, what are you talking about? Oh, my God.
You know what? I'd say the truth. I want to see it made just because I want to see Alan Moore's head explode. Literally, I would love it because he is just like Mr. Cranky Pants.
I wouldn't want all that hair to clean up afterwards.
Everything that every, you know, all of, every movie of his that gets made, he just gets more and more like, ugh, you know, you suck, I hate you, blah blah. He just like gets crazier and crazier. So I would like to see that. And but you know what? I don't know. The thing about Watchmen is it is a self-contained story, but I don't know if they can make that actually matter in 2 hours. I mean, if they made it into a
miniseries,
it'd be kind of cool to have like the superhero murder mystery kind of aspect thing and investigating that. I think that would be, that can make for an interesting movie. Now, I don't know if all the same kind of ideas and themes are going to make it through or not, or whether that's a good thing. But you know what? I think they could make it work.
HBO miniseries. Yeah. This needs to be an HBO miniseries. There's no other way it could be done, because you can get away with all the cursing and all that. You can put your mature themes in there. HBO miniseries. I want it done.
Yeah. I've said the same thing about Preacher, that's how that needs to go down, not as a movie.
Yeah, I hear you on that, man. Definitely. Drew, would you want to see a Watchmen movie?
See, the problem with that is you've got a lot of things about the Watchmen comic that it's like, it's really hard, it would be really hard to translate into film. And I'm just wondering how they plan on doing some of that stuff, like some of the actual prose stuff that they have in the series, how they would do some of that stuff.
Right, let's just ask Snake and he'll be able to tell you.
That's the thing, you'd have to could not present the whole thing as it is. You have to make choices on what you wanted to present. And that's what I was saying. If you took the angle of like a superhero murder mystery kind of thing, that part of it, and ran with that story, I think you could do it. But I think that a lot of the stuff that you'd have to cut out, you know, obviously all that like black freighter crap would have to be cut out. You know, the text pieces, that information would have to be fit into the script through dialogue or cut. Flash, so we're never going to see the actual, you know, we're never going to get the whole story in a film.
Just as long as Keanu's not in it, I'll be happy.
Oh, he's playing Rorschach, can you know it?
Oh, God.
Oh, no. No. Don't you dare. Drew, are there any that we are leaving out movie-wise?
Well, yeah, there's, let's see, coming down the pipeline, we've got next year 300's coming out, which I'm hoping is going to be pretty good.
Frank Miller's a major part of the production. If Sin City was as good as it was, which it was, then 300's going to be great.
Uh-huh. And we got the sequel to Batman Begins, which is tentatively called The Dark Knight.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I heard that there are major rumors that Harvey Dent and Penguin might be in the next one also.
Yep, I heard it's going to be Billy Dee Williams reprising his role from the original Batman.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
That was kind of funny. How do we go from Billy Dee Williams to Tommy Lee Jones? I guess they both have three-word names, but other than that...
That's really the only reason, yeah.
Because we were at Con, I don't know about when you're at Baltimore, but at the Wizard booth in Chicago, they had a lot of promo posters up for this Iron Man film in 2008.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which could be good if they get the right Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm. And I think Favreau's a good enough director, and I think he could handle it. I hope they get the right Tony Stark.
That's one of those ones, I don't know, like, he's never done a movie like that before.
Mm-hmm.
He's
actually doing one right now. He's getting ready.
Didn't he do that Zathura movie?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, because that's kind of a big special effects film, I guess. So, I don't know. Iron Man, to me, is one of those characters that's on par with, like, Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these B-list kind of, you know, and I'm sorry, but I think he's more of a B-list character as far as public recognition and all that kind of stuff goes. So you can either really sell it, like the X-Men I think really introduced to a new audience that necessarily probably didn't know who they were, so if they can do something like that for that character, I think that'll work. Otherwise, you know, that's one that I can see going either way, that, you know, he's quite a actually pretty boring character to me anyway. You know, oh, I got injured so I made a metal suit for myself, and then I'm a drunk. That's the only thing that he's ever had, you know, that's the only character.
Demon in a bottle thing.
Yeah. Well, hey, how about this? Ant-Man, Shaun of the Dead style.
I have not heard of that.
Ant-Man is being written by the same guy who wrote Shaun of the Dead. So they're doing it like comedy style from the looks of things.
Really?
That sounds really, really weird.
Yeah.
I think it could work, honestly.
I'm not sure how I feel about that one.
Hey, it's better than the rumors that were out once about a time that Jack Black was going to play Green Lantern.
Oh. Well, couldn't be any worse than Nacho Libre.
Yeah, right. How about the Avengers movie that's being planned? Obviously, once they get all of these properties, they all have all these properties under the same roof now, so they can make this Avengers movie that apparently is going to have pretty much everybody in it from the looks of things. I mean, Captain America, Iron Man, Hawkeye, Giant Man, Wasp, you name it, they could probably be in this movie.
You know what? I almost guarantee you that they will not put those major characters in that movie that are going to have their own solo movies. I don't care what they say right now. If they're making an Iron Man solo movie, they're not going to have Iron Man be in the Avengers because it just dilutes the properties.
I don't know. They could have one lead into the other pretty easily.
Well, if they're going to do the Avengers thing first, I might agree with you. But if they're doing the other one first, I don't know. Because if it's successful, then what's the benefit? They might as well just have a whole different team, and that's always what's happened. I mean, think about whenever the Avengers have been done on cartoons before. You always get, Wasp and a bunch of, and like Tigra and other weird characters that are just part of the really low down on the roster.
The Transformers Avengers that was made in the 90s was absolutely terrific. It was disgusting.
You know, I don't know, like those kind of movies where they're saying maybe someday until it starts filming. I don't believe any of it.
Mm-hmm. Drew, yay or nay on the Avengers?
It's too soon for me to have any opinion on it.
All right, cool.
When I finally know who's playing what, then I'll have an opinion on it and who's directing it.
Isn't there going to be a Hulk remake, quote-unquote remake?
They're calling it The Incredible Hulk this time. And
okay.
Yeah.
And it's a remake, not a sequel, right?
Yeah, it's. I think it's how you pronounce it, Avi Arad. He says that he wants to redo it.
You know what? I just can't see them redoing that same movie within the same movie redone twice in the same 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like that would fly to me. I mean, because people have they have short memories, but not that short.
Well, it depends. Is Lou Ferrigno in this one? I mean,
well, he was a security guard or whatever in the other one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And also, Hellboy 2 is in the pipeline. I know that.
Yeah. The Golden Army.
Okay. Yeah, it could be good. I still have to see the first one, quite frankly.
You poser.
Yeah. I
bought the three disc director's cut, and I have not watched that movie. I saw it in the theater, but I haven't dared to go into that big monster of a DVD set. Yeah.
Fantastic Four 2 starring Galactus and Silver Surfer.
They're not playing up the Galactus angle, though. They're playing up
really?
The subtitle of it is Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Okay.
So they haven't said anything about Galactus, but they say he's a herald, so I'm assuming he's a herald to Galactus.
That's, believe it or not, I have not seen the first FF movie yet because it had such negative press.
It's worth seeing. I mean, there are some pretty awful moments, but it's a fun movie.
Just from seeing the trailer, I got a geek thrill when you know, to see that flame on scene in the trailer a million times. I really enjoyed that, but otherwise, I don't know. Man, Chiklis in that disgusting-looking Thing costume, I really, really hate that look.
He plays a good Thing, though. Yeah. He does, actually.
Yeah,
I just wish he wouldn't look like a giant orange turd, but other than that...
Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm are the best reasons to see that movie.
You know, when I see a Hispanic woman with blonde hair, you know, they all look like to me.
this John Byrne moment brought to you by Sprite.
I was going
to
say, you going to go John Byrne on us now? And
yeah, I was listening to that interview, so I'm all worked up. But you know.
Oh, God.
I'm sure it was taken out of context, and I'm sure we've done enough of that, but whatever.
Burn, 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 burn. Why, oh, why, oh, why? Yeah. Let's get one more before we wrap things up. Give us the biggest one on the list, buddy.
Well, that's coming soon, we have the Deathlok movie.
Oh, no.
It's just the smallest one on the list. So.
Yes, the Deathlok movie starring Vin Diesel as Deathlok. No, I don't know. I could care less.
Why would you take such a horrible character that is like such a just... I don't even know why that character exists in the Marvel Universe.
To be Deathlok.
I mean, that he has like that fugly, burnt-off nose and just looks like so ridiculous. I don't know. But that character's never been interesting. I don't... You know, why do they pick these properties?
He's RoboCop Terminator, basically.
You asked before, like, whether there's, like, too much comic book movies or whatever.
Yeah.
this is where we're going to start getting that and getting that backlash when we start doing these B-level, C-level, D-level characters, and people are just going to be burned out if we get too much of that stuff. Because I think the big, having the big marquee films, having the Spider-Man franchise or having that X-Men franchise, you know, or the Batman franchise, those are big iconic characters that I think are deserving of a big movie and money is spent well. And some of these other characters, you know, you can see they have lower budgets, they have less quality. You know, one other one I think we're forgetting, and I guess, I didn't see this because it got mixed reviews, but the Punisher film.
I enjoyed that.
Thomas Jane did a very good job in that movie.
Okay.
He really did. And Travolta is actually pretty decent in it.
But again, like, that movie is, you know, it's obviously for Marvel, it's a B-list production because it has totally smaller budget, you know, not really effect-driven, anything like that. And the Punisher is obviously more of a gun-shooting kind of guy.
Yeah. In Tampa Bay.
Yeah. And they're doing
or wherever
sequel,
it was.
So.
Yeah, they are, actually. And everybody's going to be back, so.
Yeah. And we had,
we forgot Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Wonder Woman. I was just about to say that. Wonder Woman, and we got the two spin-off X-Men movies, too, coming out.
Yeah, Magneto, which apparently is actually going to star Ian McKellen as a young Magneto using this new effect that they used in the beginning of X-Men 3. Mm-hmm. So it could very well work very well, or it could look absolutely like crap. We don't know yet.
You know what? I got to tell you that I hadn't heard of that Magneto film, but, you know, again, I don't know. I don't know if that has much of an appeal to me, depending on what the story goes, I guess. And
it's over expansion. That's definitely overexpansion. You don't need a Magneto movie.
Wolverine solo movie. You know, I think Hugh Jackman did a good job, and he's a very charismatic guy in that film. And Wolverine does have a big history of storylines. But, you know, let's face it, his best storylines were X-Men stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His solo series has been pretty much forgettable and always has been.
Except for the recent Civil War storyline. That's been really, really good.
So I don't want him to end up being turn into a skeleton and then coming back to life again like they did in that series. But otherwise...
Ends up looking like a scene from Terminator or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then one minute later, he's fully grown back to his whole self.
Well, you talk about Cyclops. Marsden has said that he'd be willing to be in the Wolverine movie, so maybe he's not dead after all. We don't know.
I think that's just because he wants the work. I don't know. I don't know if anybody wants him to be in the movie, but he's like, "Hey, I'm available, guys."
Well, he wants to be able to lose another girl because that seems to be all he does in movies. So.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't he the most pathetic guy in Superman Returns?
Oh.
I mean, how could you not just feel like that? Man, what a loser. What a loser.
He was a Mary Sue, pretty much. I mean, you know, he was the character that was brought in that was Mr. Perfect and, you know, was not Superman. So Superman was not perfect, but this guy was. I mean, come on.
Well, at least he didn't die in the film. I was surprised that they didn't kill him off, because that would have been a nice, neat little way to clear the runway. But
yeah. He wasn't completely vilified in that movie, so...
Wonder Woman. What do we think is going to happen with Wonder Woman?
Now, do we even know anything about this as far as locked-in details yet?
Joss Whedon's directing. That's all we really know.
All right. Yeah, I hope that we don't see Diana the Wonder Woman Slayer or something. I don't. It depends on what angle they take. I don't know. Wonder Woman has just that huge kind of air of camp coming from the 70s series. So whether they can make her relevant or not in this day and age, I'm not sure. I'll have to wait and see who they cast and how it turns out.
Yeah, have they cast anyone yet, Shiro?
Not from what I've seen. I think they're still narrowing it down, I think, right now.
Okay. Well, as long as it's not Sarah Michelle Gellar, because that's a cop-out.
Well, I didn't hear that. I thought they were pushing around, what's her name, Faith. Is it Liza Dushku or whatever her name is to do that?
Oh, no. Ugh.
I think somebody said, like, I wouldn't want to see that movie, but I'd want to see that movie, if you know what I mean.
Yes, you just want to see her in the Wonder Woman outfit.
That's the thing. Like, that. I think that's a problem with these iconic characters. I mean, is there an actor that is appropriate that can carry that part?
Yes, Lucy Lawless, but she's not going to do it.
I don't see her in that part, but...
Come on, she's the warrior woman, man.
Nah.
Well.
I mean, if you want to do this, like, Diana, the character, whoever's going to be Wonder Woman, she should be someone that's, like, huge.
China.
Very large. Not.
Oh, God.
See, you didn't get my second point. She has to be very huge and very hot at the same time.
Oh, okay. Well, and then China's out.
And you have to be able to kick ass. And I don't know if there is an actress in Hollywood that fits that bill. You know, if they go with, like, an unknown or somebody that they can find to play the part, that would probably be a better choice. So I don't know. It's all going to depend on what they do with it.
Well, Joss has said that he doesn't want her to fly. That's number one. So it looks like we might have the invisible jets return.
That's even worse than flying, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I don't know whether or not there's going to be a Diana Prince in this or whether it's just going to be Wonder Woman. That hasn't been confirmed, so...
Yeah, that's the thing. This is just like me being a kid all over again, reading all these details about things that aren't anywhere close to happening yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just like too much speculation, and who knows? He might back out. He might have some other project that comes along. Who knows?
All right. Well, let's get our final thoughts in, and let's include with these final thoughts your guilty pleasure for the world of comic book movies, if you indeed do have one. But, yeah, any final thoughts on the world of comic book movies? And we'll start it off with Matt.
Well, there. I mean, obviously, we're in the middle of a comic movie renaissance the last 5-6 years. We've gotten huge blockbuster franchises reborn. You know, for a comic nerd, this is a golden age of films. Whether that's going to continue, I mean, like we said, we all kind of noted that X-Men 3 really didn't live up to the first two, or didn't live up to the second one, at least. You know, Spider-Man 3, that's going to be kind of the linchpin for me to see if that movie's as good or better than the second one, then that'll keep my faith going in the films. Same thing with the Batman film. I don't want to see this go overexposed. And it seems like now they're getting into kind of the closer to the bottom of the barrel with the characters that they're choosing. And, you know, if we start getting a lot of kind of B-level crappy character movies like Catwoman, like some other things like Elektra, you know, the public is going to just get sick of that. It's going to be a negative again instead of a positive.
And Drew, final thoughts.
I really agree with Matt on this. And I think that if they continue on this path of every sequel has to have more and more villains, I think they're going to dilute the films that they set out to make, and I really think that they need to focus their energies on creating more good stories with maybe one or two villains, and also just dialing it back a little bit. You don't have to come out with one of these every 2 years. So I just think that they need to make their focus on making good movies and not trying to beat Superman Returns to the punch.
Yeah.
That's where I think, you know what, actually the area where I see has the most potential for growth is in that category that we talked about, the stealth comic movies.
Yeah.
Smaller stuff, like you said, you know, and it's not fiction, but, you know, I really like the Crumb documentary, American Splendor, like you said, Ghost World, History of Violence, you know, I really enjoy that film. If we get more of those kind of movies that are just going to be, you know, based on solid independent titles that aren't necessarily guys in tights running around beating each other up, I think that that's probably where the most potential lies, I think, in the future.
Yeah. Oh, and also, before we do actually finish wrapping it up, and also before I get my final thoughts, I mean, it's not technically a comic movie, it's more a geek movie, but if you haven't seen Comic Book the Movie, starring Mark Hamill, it's the best mockumentary about comic books ever made. See this movie, you'll be on the floor laughing hysterically if you're a comic fan. It is totally worth it, so make sure you go out there and watch yourself some Comic Book the Movie. I would watch it time and time again, it's fantastic. My final thoughts on the world of comic book movies is as simple as this. In the late 70s, it took DC Comics to make comic book movies be on the map. In the 90s and 2000, it took Marvel Comics to put comic book movies on the map. It's gone full circle at this point. Basically, DC started it off, Marvel finished it off, and now DC is coming back with their own movies again. The quality is superb so far. If you lessen the quality, if you put out too many of those B-movies that are basically out just because they're a property, you're going to lessen the value of comic book movies yet again, and we're going to be back to that drawl and dull time of the 80s where you did not want to see these movies unless you were high on the couch with your friends. So do not let this happen again, folks. Do not let this happen again. DC and Marvel, you have something great going right now. Independents have great things going right now. Don't get to the point where comic book movies are a joke again. Let them remain as huge as they are today. And as Matt said, it's going to take not putting out a movie every 2 years, just make good movies. Good franchises plus good movies equals good times for all. Just get it done, folks. Get it done. And I think that's the best cap we can probably have on this. So I'd say we pretty much did a good job of going all the way through all those movies and all the crap fest and all the joyous occasions that have occurred over the years. So
man, the problem with this kind of thing is I'm sure we forgot a bunch of stuff, too. But
oh, I know we did. And if we did forget anything, post it up on the forums or send us an email over comictiming@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to add that in. And actually, before we wrap things up, as I quickly log into my email account here, there was actually an email that was sent to us by a buddy that I met over at the Baltimore Comic Con who had a chance to listen to Comic Timing that actually sent something over. So let me log on in right now and read said comment, and then we'll end up here. But while I do that, by the way, Drew, I must thank you very, very much for joining us on this episode. It's about damn time you ended up on Comic Timing, buddy.
Yeah. We tried it once, and it didn't work out. I overslept, and it didn't work out, but I think it worked out pretty well this time, so.
Yep, and I'm officially going to start a PayPal account to buy Drew a microphone.
Well, oh, and speaking of PayPal, actually, there is a donations button up on the Comic Timing page now, as I finally got myself a checking account, so I'm able to finally have a PayPal donation. So if you do want to support the show and support this straight out of college boy, then please be greatly appreciated if you would be able to do so. If you can't, then so be it. A couple bucks here and there, whatever. Just if you want to donate, you can. If not, nothing against you there. So here we go with the actual email here. And this one's from Jeremy Monken. And here we go. Hey, Ian, this is Jeremy. I was a dude in the Superman hat who sat next to you at the Harvey Awards. Comic Timing is great. It's much more down-to-earth than some of the other stuff I've heard out there. Conversational, good stuff. Good to hear you and your lady friend scored some tiramisu. Amazing, the PvP guy didn't catch it first. Also, oh, the man. Giant...
Come on, hey. Scott Kurtz, come on.
I know. Hey, I'm only reading here, okay? I'm only reading. I don't agree with that. Also, the giant-sized Planet Hulk book showed that Banner is still much a part of the Hulk persona. You should check it out if you can. It gives a lot of insight where the Hulk is right now. Keep up the good work. Later, Zen, a.k.a. Jeremy Monken. So, Jeremy, thank you very much for getting back to me, and thank you very much for giving the kind words to Comic Timing, and I'll have to actually check out the giant-sized Planet Hulk, because we want to see a bit of the Banner persona to see whether it's still there or not. So, thank you very much for that. So, yeah, we will wrap things up here officially now. So, Matt, as always, thank you very much for joining me, buddy.
It's a pleasure. And hey, guys, make sure that you tune in either Friday or Saturday to the first official episode of That's What She Said.
Yay. Ho, ho, ho. Exactly. And make sure to watch The Office on Thursday.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, you will be mocked.
Yes, and this man can mock, so you better watch out, folks. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And yet again, if you guys can, please donate to the show. It will be graciously appreciated, but again, it's not required. The show will never be paid.
I don't know, folks. Ian, that money's going to go right into Ian's girlfriend's pocket, so I don't know. You better watch out.
Oh my God, Matt. You know, nah. Wow. See, now I just, yeah, you better be kidding, man, because now I look like a bad guy here. No, actually, it'll go towards probably a mixer and at one point better microphones and all that. So nice. I want to get towards that exactly.
No, I'm just giving you the business because I know how it goes. You know. You got a girlfriend, all your money goes out the window, so.
Well, speaking of pay, how much am I getting paid for this?
Yeah. You're getting paid. Yeah, you're getting paid and finally getting those X-Men posters once Wally sends those along to me, all right? How about that, buddy? That work?
That works.
Okay, and don't forget to send us your iTunes reviews over on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. Some guy named Matt gave us a review. I have no idea who the hell this guy
is. Yeah, it's like a conflict of interest. What the hell is that all?
Yeah, right. And once again, guys, thank you for joining us. Drew, Matt, it's been a pleasure.
As always.
Yep. Go see Man Thing.
Yes. Go see Man Thing on DVD. Oh, my Lord. Thank you for bringing that up, man. Talk about a B-movie. And as always, there's always time for comics. I gotta wake up at 10 a.m. tomorrow to buy Yankee tickets, so I'll be up early, so I'll probably...
What a tough life you got there, yeah.
thank you very much,
boy. I gotta get up at 10. I gotta get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go find my way through a freaking urban ghetto war zone in my school.
Urban ghetto war zone? I think you're making that up, sir.
Not too much. Surprisingly okay. Not. I'm not making it up that much. While I'm, like, wrestling with a crack dealer, I'll think of you. It's getting up at 10 o'clock, so have fun.
What the hell, dude?
No, I'm just kidding.
The mean streets of Milwaukee, is that it?
Where I live is actually, it's kind of a smaller town, but it's in between Chicago and Milwaukee, and it's got a huge gang problem, and we have, like, the highest murder rate in Wisconsin.
Drew, where is Chico, by the way?
Chico is in Northern California.
Okay.
You go to Chico State, did you?
I used to go to Chico State.
Oh, you did?
I transferred to the... smaller community college.
I saw there's actually a Chico State.
Well, it's always on the list of like the top party schools too. So.
Yeah, it was on the Playboy's top 10 party schools since like the 70s or something.
But now that June left, it's just gone downhill.
Well, obviously.